From the Rock Creek area.
Good evening, family. My name is Sharon. I'm an addict. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, and I'd like to also thank CPRCNA19 for having me come to speak on the topic, Who's an Addict? And this is it's going to be an experience because I haven't spoken on this level for maybe a year or so. And I'm truly honored to be here clean, you know, because without Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be standing here, you know, and to identify and qualify myself, I'm truly an addict, and I guess that's why they asked me to speak, right? Because my behavior and characteristics are quite odd. I'm just real grateful to be here. I'm real, real grateful to be here, and I only can say that through working steps in my life, that I've been able to be introduced to myself and become willing to do something different in my life. Just to qualify myself, I'm originally from the Rock Creek area, born and raised in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, uptown, you know. And I was a get-wit, nitwit. I had issues way before I picked up. I was stealing from my mother's pocketbook to people-please. Before my addiction fully took control of my life, and it got progressively worse swiftly. It wasn't a period where it just stopped. It just progressively got worse. And being a get with nitwit and having to do what I had to do to people please to be a part of, because I'm an only child, so I didn't know what to do outside of the home, you know, and I used to cut classes, drink bumpers on the bleachers, and it started just sociably, but it ended in turmoil and a lot of pain, self-inflicted pain, and I've experimented with a lot of drugs, you know. I like smoking marijuana, PCP. I sing like Mahalia Johnson when I smoke PCP, and I have a lot of blackouts. I fall down steps, you know, and it just I could not continue. I saw a friend run his bike into a wall, and that kind of like woke me up to say, nah, I'm gonna try something different, because I knew soon that I would do that too. But I like blacking out and coming to and believing that I can go back and get some more and that it'll just be, you know, a little better. The only prayer I had when I had my blackouts was, God, if you just let me see one more time. I literally went blind. I couldn't see anything. And people say, come on, get off them people's front porches. Man, they're going to call the 5-0 on you. And I'd be like, yes! So I love to sing, right, when I smoke PCP. And it just got progressively worse, you know, and I'm able to share that because that was truly a part of my addiction that took over my life, and I snorted locker room, you know. I used to catch the bus from Woody's and smuggle drugs down in Lawton at a real early age. You know, I just did what I had to do to fit in, to be a part of, not knowing that it would cause my life to be a complete hell. The drug that kind of like took me to my knees was cocaine. You know, I started off as a party-going person that could go down the Coliseum, and I did a lot of skating down in Northwest Washington, D.C., when they had the piano down there, and Calorama Road, and they're now closed, so it just got worse. I could no longer function. You know, once I started using cocaine, I could no longer bathe. I could no longer brush my teeth. I no longer looked in the mirror. I no longer could work. I didn't look like I look today. in the end, I was 110, bald-headed and black, and just didn't know where to go. Narcotics Anonymous was the best-kept secret from an addict like me. I didn't know there was a place, a resting place, where I could get better one day at a time. I thought I was doomed to trick, lie, steal, get locked up, get out, trick, lie, steal, get locked up, come out, trick, lie, steal, have suicidal thoughts, go back to jail. And it was just a spiral that I never want to live like that again in my life. I was living at animal level prior to surrendering. You know, I chased behind cars. I stole anything that wasn't pinned down, I was going to take. You know, they like to stash stuff in my crack house, and I like to steal it. So I would go uptown. I lived out in Maryland by the grace of God. It wasn't because I paid the rent. It was just that the rental office trusted that I would pay the rent. But once I got into the apartment, I resumed to use. So no rent was paid. I had a crack house. I didn't have a luxury apartment in PG County. It was a crack house that I liked to peek out the windows because I knew the police were coming. I suffered with a lot of paranoia when I smoked crack cocaine. And lo and behold, you know, God placed me in a relationship with a gentleman that thought I needed some help. Because the thing with my addiction was that I stayed in denial for so long. Even though I couldn't bathe and I couldn't change my children's pampers and I was spending their welfare money, although all those things were happening, I really didn't think I was that bad. You know, I stayed in denial for a very, very long time. And not until God placed me into this relationship with a guy that I was selling, because I always had a motive for getting with you. It wasn't because that I thought that we was going to make it. We was going to have this grandiose future. He was selling. He was slinging. So I thought it might be a possibility that we can get together until I smoked all his shit or he ran out or I beat him real good that he was going to beat me. So it was a motive for me being in that relationship. And so my disease affected all areas of my life. You know, it wasn't just I couldn't bathe. It affected anybody I came in contact with. You know, I live to use and use to live. I mean, I'm an addict. Trust me when I say that, because being clean today, I still see the compulsiveness and other ways that my disease manifests itself in my life. So God placed me in this relationship with this gentleman that thought I had a problem, because I was in true denial. And as long as he fed me drugs, it was okay. And what he told me was a place I can go to get some help. So in order to save that relationship, you know, and I know I'm not unique, but I went in treatment because he thought I had a problem. It wasn't because I thought I had a problem, trust me. It was because he thought I had a problem. And maybe if I got myself together just to show him I didn't have a problem, I can come out and be with you some more, because it was a motive of me coming back. And I proceeded to call the different facilities in the Washington metropolitan area, and a lot of beds were taken. They had nothing over D.C. General. Seton House was filled up. Marion Harion just wasn't allowing women to come in that particular day. And I proceeded to call up to the Washington Hospital Center. And a gentleman by the name of Jeff told me that they didn't have any beds either. So I didn't think, I said, well, hell, shit. It just ain't meant for me to get no help that you think that I might need. So I proceeded to continue to use, and it wasn't long before, man, I was sitting on Clark Elementary playground, you know, and my disease, you know, had me feeling lower than the pavement that I sat on. You know, I ran out of tricks. You know, I ran out of cons. I ran out of games. I felt bad. I smelt bad. I was so hurt, and it was like I just didn't have nowhere else to go. I was really caught in the grips of my addiction. And what happened was that I proceeded, and today I go to a church that's right across the street from Clark Elementary, and my addiction had me standing on Georgian Decatur watching people go to work at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. I was still on that corner watching them get off the bus. That's how my addiction had. My addiction had me walking without shoes. You pregnant. You know, my addiction had me doing some things that I never thought that I'd do in alleys and dark ways and cars and being raped. You know, my addiction carried me places that I never want to visit again. And what happened was that this particular Sunday morning, I saw the people as I sat on that playground. I saw the people going to church, and I wondered if I really could get some help. You know, I really felt so bad. And I think God had me to call up the Washington Hospital Center one more time. And by the grace of God, when I spoke to Jeff this particular morning, he told me that they had a bed available just for me. And what happened was that I went and proceeded to go home and take a bath in Clorox because I told you I just felt so bad. I felt that was the only way that I could possibly feel clean because my spirit was so dirty. And I called my mother, and she was giving tough love long before I knew what it was. And by that time, I could no longer go see my children. You know, she said, she didn't even want me to call her house. When I called, it was, what do you want? Don't call my house. You know, I was just abandoned. I had burnt so many bridges, and nobody really didn't want to be bothered with me. And I really didn't want to be bothered with myself either. I really wanted to die in the grips of my addiction, but I just didn't have the courage to do that. And what happened was that I called up my mother's, and she said, man, you need to go up there, do what them people say do, and I'm not bringing you no cigarettes. I proceeded to go up to the Washington Hospital Center. And I didn't know I was going on a psych unit. I thought I was going to the hospital center. You know, where you go get checkups, you know, they take your blood pressure, they give you a diagnosis, they tell you what's wrong, they give you some medicine, and you go home. Lo and behold, I had a rude awakening. And the awakening was that they had placed me on 2K unit, a psychiatric unit, that I couldn't walk outside those doors. You know, they locked the door. You know, I was on a psychiatric unit where crazy people belong. And I fitted right in, but I identified out. I thought Narcotics Anonymous was a cult. I said it was no way that I was going to tell my story. It was no way that I was going to tell my deepest and darkest secrets. I didn't have a problem. I didn't have the meds. You know, I snorted dope, but I didn't shoot dope. So I really just identified out. And I really didn't think. I said, somebody in here is using. You know, somebody in here is lying, and I just need to find a way out. And my way out was, 8 months later, I used. You know, and I picked up right where I left off at. My disease progressed. I picked up they were selling Miller ponies at that time. And I picked up a pony, and I was back on 8th and Kennedy probably 10 minutes later. You know, I mean, it didn't take long for my disease to kick in right where I left off. And I was back on my knees doing some degrading things, you know, and it just got worse. It got real bad for me, man, because as a woman, you know, I had to give all, I had to do all just to be, you know, just to get a crumb. You know, I gave my car out, you know what I'm saying? I stole my mother's whole, I ain't take one piece of jewelry. You know what I'm saying? I took the whole damn jewelry box. You know, why take one piece when I can have it all? You know, so my disease, it really didn't matter who I harmed, but most of all, I harmed myself. You know, and I was real, real beaten. I was real hurt. And what happened was that by me going into that process, you know, of 2K up at the Washington Hospital Center, I had a sponsor by name only. And this is my process of surrendering. And what happened was that there was a young lady by the name of Helen H., you know, and she would call my aunt's house without my permission, and she would say stuff like, Sharon, I'll love you till you learn how to love yourself. Keep coming back. And during my runs, I would see posts. I didn't know they had postmasters in Narcotics Anonymous. So I would see postmasters in my run, and I would duck through alleys, you know. I didn't know they had bus drivers that was in Narcotics Anonymous. So by this time, you know, my mother only gave me permission to take my daughter to school. And so I would see bus drivers, and I had on overcoats, you know, and it was springtime. And what they told me was that he said, ride with me to the end of the line because you ain't got to live like that. So God was doing for me long before I knew what to do for myself. And what happened was that I took that ride to the end of the line this particular morning after dropping my daughter off. And he said, baby, just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. And what happened was that I did that. I started going to a church down on 19th Street, 19th and Penn. By the grace of God, I was able to get my job back in the federal government. And I know that's only by the grace of God because I smoked PCP on Department of Interior rooftops. You know what I'm saying? So I know it's only by the grace of God that I was able to get another government job, you know. And I started going to meetings. And I did exactly what they said. They said, fake it till you make it. So I put a bunch of mints in my mouth, even though I was drinking, you know. And that was my process of surrendering, you know. And what I only can tell you is that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know. And by the grace of God, I have not found it necessary to pick up since April 21st, 1990. You know, and it's only by the grace of God. You know, my process began at that little church on 19th Street, and I haven't looked back since. You know, recovery has offered me dreams and aspirations that I never thought that I could ever, goals that I never thought that I could ever, ever muster the thought of reaching. You know, I was lost in the grips of my addiction. And today, I've gained a sense of self. You know, I'm getting better. I'm not the same person I used to be. When I first came in, I was so angry and rigid and timid, and you could see it on my face. And I can curl like that today, but it's not as often. You know what I'm saying? Today, I'm able to open up and tell people what's going on, opposed to holding everything inside. You know, this is a gift that I wouldn't trade for the world. You know, thank God that I had to go through what I had to go through to get to the other side. You know, because I don't think I would be here had I not gone through my process. You know, and I'm truly, truly grateful to be clean just for today. April 21st, I'll be acknowledging 15 years, and that's only by the grace. I claim all this because of God and the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and the people here. You know, it has not been an easy journey, but it does get better. For the newcomer, you don't have to use even if you want to use. Just keep coming back. I don't believe no one in this convention center used the way I did. I just don't believe no one used the way I did. And if I can get clean, anybody can get clean. Just don't use. You know, get a sponsor. Pick up the phone. You know what I'm saying? Give yourself a chance. The small things that were written on boards up at the Washington Hospital Center, like this too shall perish. You're only as sick as your secrets. Keep coming back. More will be revealed. All of those small sayings, I still live in my life today. And it does get better. You know, I'm a witness that it gets better. You know, there's hope for an addict. The old lie's dead. Once an addict, always an addict. I'm here to say that that's not true. You know, I'm a recovering addict, one day at a time. You know, and I'm truly, truly grateful to be in this process. You know, God is so good. You know, I've seen miracles happen in my life. You know, I have a college degree. You know, I've had homes. Those are just some small outside fringe benefits that you get once you become clean and give your life a chance to blossom and flourish as God would have it to be. You know, it's just a blessing to be in this process. You know, it's not all easy, you know, and like I had mentioned, you know, sometimes I can become compulsive, you know, in different areas of my life, especially when it comes with relationships. You know what I'm saying? It's just crazy. You know what I'm saying? And what I've learned how to do is to apply the steps in all areas of my life. You know, and look at the role that I play in things and step back and reevaluate and stay in prayer. You know, that's the greatest tool that I have today is prayer. You know, it keeps me going. It keeps me above the little stuff. that tends to kind of like put me on a different level of destruction. You know, I'm just real, real grateful to be here. I thank everybody that came out to support me. You all truly have touched my life in so many different ways, you know, and you all know who you are, you know, and I just thank you all for being here, and thanks for letting me share.